Christian life is not meant to be a mere dip in the pool. Our generous God offers a wellspring of eternal blessings for those who accept his love and forgiveness. Northgate Church is a community where believers are encouraged to wholeheartedly follow Christ and fully experience God's goodness. A new message series presents 7 ways to go all in through baptism, welcoming, serving, group life, giving, inviting, and sharing our stories. Here's today's message.
We are praising the Lord today. I love Jesus. Do you love Jesus? I love Jesus, and I love praising Jesus, and I love praising Jesus with you. It's good to have you here this morning. I just really feel like we are here excited to be worshiping the Lord this morning together. So thank you for being here. We are in a series called All In. And if you are new, and I know we have some people who are here for the first time or visiting, we are talking about going all in with Jesus. So no half-hearted measures. We don't want to, you know, just put the toe in. We're going to go in both feet. We're jumping off the edge of the pier. I don't play poker. You know, I just don't. Okay, but right, there isn't all in when you take all your chips and it's all you do, right? It's like everything's riding on this. I'm just pushing it all in. Well, that's the idea. That's exactly what we're talking about in this series, that we want to go all in with Christ. We don't want to hold anything back. We want to be everything he wants us to be. We want to follow him to the utmost, because we want, one, to praise him, just like we've been doing this morning in song, and that's part of praising him, is saying, everything I've got, I give back to you, Lord, and that's part of praising him, and we want to receive all of the blessings that God has for us. And you know, we just won't if we're half-hearted about it. We just won't receive everything God has for us if we're just kind of testing it out, if we're just going in a little bit. We got to go all in with Christ to receive all the blessings that he has for us. So that's what the series is about. And today we're going to be talking about service. I got a story I want to tell you about, an experience I had a few weeks, I guess it was more like a couple months ago now. Deb and I, our son Zach lives down in New York City. We went down to visit him. And we didn't really have any plans. We just went down to see him because we hadn't seen him in a while. But while we were there, we were talking about what we were going to do. And we started talking about seeing a show, which is one of the things Deb and I both love to do, is go to a show. And they do them so well, you know, in New York, off-Broadway, on-Broadway. So we were looking up some shows, and they started talking about this show called Come From Away. Any of you heard of it, Come From Away? Nobody? Well, good. I feel a lot better because I had not heard of it either. But Deb and Zach had heard about it, and so they started talking about it, and it sounded good. And I said, well, let's see if we can get some tickets. And we were able to get some tickets for the next night, and we went and saw it, and it was phenomenal. It was wonderful. Let me tell you real briefly what it's about. Come From Away, September 11th, 2001, when the attacks happened, U.S. airspace was closed down. Remember this? It was kind of an eerie thing, right? No planes flying at all that day. On top of everything we were experiencing emotionally and spiritually, it got very quiet in the skies. Well, planes that were in the air, of course, had to find a place to land as quickly as possible, immediately. In Gander, Newfoundland, Canada, there is the town of Gander has an air base attached to it, which used to be very, very busy, because planes that were flying across the Atlantic or coming from across the Atlantic would stop there to refuel. It was a strategic place for refueling those planes. But as planes became more efficient and were able to fly farther on the fuel and able to hold more fuel, that base was not needed any longer, and so planes started bypassing it, and it became a very unused airfield. The town of Gander became kind of a small town, kind of out of the way in Newfoundland, and nobody really paid a lot of attention to Gander, a town of about 10,000 people. Well, on 9/11, 38 planes, passenger planes, and 4 military planes landed at that air base, at that airport in Gander. That may not sound like a lot, but remember I told you 10,000 people lived in this town? 7,000 passengers descended upon them. Can you imagine? Right? makes our family gatherings look pretty insignificant, right? 7,000 passengers landed that day, one day landed that day at the airport in Gander. And all of a sudden, the people of Gander were faced with a monumental task. And the task was, how do we take care of all of these people? You see, when they were allowed to leave the planes, those passengers, they were not allowed to get any of their checked bags. The only thing they could take off the plane was what they had in their carry-on bags. Nobody knew how long they were going to be there. A lot of those passengers were on their way home or on their way to a destination where they expected to be able to get the things they needed, you know, that we need every day to take care of ourselves. They didn't have supply. A lot of them didn't have prescription medications that they needed. Of course, they needed food. They needed water. They needed, you know, a place to shower, a place to change. They needed clothes. They needed all kinds of. There were animals on these planes that needed to be taken care of. There were all kinds of things that all of a sudden the people of Gander were responsible for taking care of. 10,000 people in the town, 7,000 passengers to take care of, not knowing how long they were going to be there. Well, it's a phenomenal story. The play just does a great job of showing how the people of Gander responded to this. And really, as I thought about it, it's all about that. It's all about serving. And they did that so well. They responded in service to the people that were suddenly placed. And I thought, you know, the analogy just, it goes a little farther. Here's a lot of people who are, you know, their flights have been disrupted. They don't know what's going on. A lot of them didn't even know about the attacks for some hours. They just knew that they were forced to land in Gander, but they didn't know why. So there's fear, there's anxiety, there's, you know, all anger, you know, and questions and confusion. And I thought, that's a whole lot like our world. You know, we got a lot of people living in this world with fear and anxiety and questions and confusion, and they don't know what to do, and they don't know what's coming next, and they don't know how their needs are going to be met, and they don't know what their needs really even are. And here we are, the church. And why are we here? Because just like the people of Gander, we have a mission. We have a job to do, and it's to serve the people around us. That's why the church is here. That's why God doesn't just take us all up to heaven the moment that we get saved. Here's the main point I want to make today. Every follower of Jesus is also called to be a servant to others. Every follower of Jesus is also called to be a servant to others. It doesn't matter what you do for a career. It doesn't matter if you're a mechanic or a doctor or a teacher, or if you pick up the trash on the side of the road, or whatever you do. If you have, or maybe you're not working in a career, you're a stay-at-home mom or stay-at-home dad, or you're retired. You know, whatever you're involved in, you are also called to be a servant of Christ. You are called to serve other people. Every single one of us has that role. Why? Because that's the role that Jesus had, and we're followers of Jesus. You know, when Jesus issued his mission statement for his life, he said, "The Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many." That's Mark 10:45. That's the way Jesus described his mission to the world, not as one who came to be served, but as one who came to serve the world. So we are all called, if we're followers of Jesus, we're called to do the same thing, to follow him. You know, there's so many examples of this, so many stories you could tell about people serving. I was reminded of one. Pastor John was at Kingdom Bound this week, and he shared this with us. He said, you know, there was a time, Anthony, who leads our worship up here, he manages the worship tent at Kingdom Bound. Any of you go to Kingdom Bound? Are any of you there? Okay. So maybe you were even at the worship tent when this happened. I don't know. But he went, Anthony manages that. Well, he discovered just a few minutes before a certain band was supposed to play that they weren't there. And when he tracked them down, he discovered that they hadn't even arrived at the airport yet to be picked up. And yet they were supposed to get on stage in like 10, 15 minutes. So now he's got no band. Okay, he's got a whole lot of people in the worship tent. What are you going to do? Well, you know what he did? Anthony and Sarah, who was up here leading worship as well this morning, they went out on stage and they led worship for the next hour. They hadn't planned to. They hadn't expected to. Yeah, we're blessed to have them here, and we're blessed that they can do that kind of thing. But you see, they are gifted by God to do something, to serve, and when the need arose, they responded to it immediately. They didn't look around and say, well, who else can we find? Can we get somebody else up here? But they did it themselves because they're wired to serve. I was reading the Daily News yesterday I actually do get the newspaper still. I know that seems like an odd thing to do, but I like to read a physical newspaper. So I'm reading the Daily News yesterday, and what do I read? I read an article about a young man from Bergen who's serving in the Navy. And it's a very nice article about this man's character and all that he's doing and accomplishing. And as I'm reading along, a lot of it is interviews from his parents. But then I see the name Mike Culkin, and my eyes got wide. Mike Culkin? Mike Culkin is a Free Methodist pastor of Perry. Mike Culkin, 20 or so years ago, was this man's youth leader at Young Life when he was just a teenager. And now this man is doing great things in the Navy. He's got a career in the Navy, and he's doing wonderful things. And I thought, there it is. 20 years ago, Mike didn't know this guy was going to be a rising guy in the Navy, but Mike served him as pastor. And I can guarantee you that if you ask Mike about it, he said, listen, I just served him because God called me to be a youth pastor to him, and I gave him my best, and I did what I was asked to do. And there you go. Our service turns into now this man is serving our country in the Navy. I read a little further in the paper. And I see an article about Caravan, one of the ministries here in Batavia that Paul Olson is involved with. And some of you have been involved with Caravan Ministries as well. You volunteered and helped them out. So I'm reading about Caravan has a community health day, a way of serving our community and people in need in our community. And they had 50 people get free dental care through their ministry this week. And I turned to the last page of the paper, and there's one of our Northgate people. I'm not going to mention by name because I'd embarrass her. But if you get the paper, you can see it for yourself. She gave haircuts to people. Why? Because God has gifted her to be able to cut people's hair, and she's a follower of Christ. And so what do? You serve people the way that God has gifted you, and she served these people by giving them haircuts. That's wonderful stuff. Isn't that awesome? This is all it's about. You know, I was just having a conversation with someone here at the church this morning. And she was telling me about a man who has some needs, and he's struggling, and he doesn't know the Lord. And so she said, I gave him my Bible. I gave him my Bible. And she said, Pastor Vern, do you have another Bible for me? And I said, of course I do. And so, you know, and you think, well, you give someone a Bible. You know, that's you know, not quite like, you know, the people of Gander responding to. But, you know, have you ever heard, I think it was St. Teresa of Lisieux, right? It's a French thing, and I didn't do well in French at all. But St. Teresa said, we may not all do great things, but we can do little things with great love. And that's what that is. Here's a guy in need, I'll give him my Bible. It's a little thing, but it's done with great love. And that's what God is looking for from all of us. Are we ready to be the kind of people who will serve others in great things or little things? But whatever we do it with great love. Let's look at the scripture this morning. It's from John chapter 13. And there is no better passage in the Bible, I think, for understanding what it means to serve with great love than this passage. This is John chapter 13. And this happens just hours before Jesus goes to the cross. And that's important to keep in mind as we read this account, that this is just hours before Jesus' arrest and his crucifixion. It's also important that you know that during this time, we'll talk about in John 13, the disciples and Jesus are all gathered around a table, what we call the upper room, where they're having the last meal before Jesus' arrest. And there's some bickering going on at the table. John doesn't tell us that, but Luke tells us that there's some bickering going on at the table. And the bickering is all about this. Who is Jesus' MVP? Who's the all-star apostle, right? And they're not saying, oh, it's you, Tom. You're the all-star. No, it's John. John's the all-star. Amy's the all-star. No, it's I'm the all-star. I'm the MVP. I'm the greatest. No, you're not. You weren't even up there on the Mount of Transfiguration with him. I was. Yeah, but you were. So were a couple other people. That doesn't mean anything. You actually screwed up a few times, and he had to call you out on it. It doesn't matter. I'm the greatest. You're the greatest. I'm not. That kind of stuff is going on. All right? That's the scene. Hours before Jesus dies on the cross for us. And this is what happens. It was just before the Passover festival. Jesus knew that the hour had come for him to leave this world and go to the Father. Having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. The evening meal was in progress, and the devil had already prompted Judas, the son of Simon Iscariot, to betray Jesus. Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power, and that he had come from God and was returning to God. So he got up from the meal, took off his outer clothing, and wrapped a towel around his waist. After that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash his disciples' feet, drying them with a towel that was wrapped around him. He came to Simon Peter, who said to him, "Lord, are you going to wash my feet?" Jesus replied, "You do not realize now what I'm doing, but later you will understand." "No," said Peter, "you shall never wash my feet." Jesus answered, "Unless I wash you, you have no part with me." "Then, Lord," Simon Peter replied, "not just my feet, but my hands and my head as well." Jesus answered, "Those who have had a bath need only to wash their feet. Their whole body is clean, and you are clean, though not every one of you." For he knew who was going to betray him, and that was why he said not everyone was clean. When he had finished washing their feet, he put on his clothes and returned to his place. "Do you understand what I've done for you?" he asked them. "You call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, for that is what I am. Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet. I have set you an example that you should do as I have done for you. Very truly I tell you, no servant is greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. Now that you know these things, you'll be blessed if you do them." This is Warren Buffett cleaning the toilets. This is the President of the United States picking up cigarette butts off the sidewalk. Actually, this is more than that. This is more than that. Those examples don't even come close to what's happening here, because this is Jesus Christ, God incarnate, washing the feet of his disciples. The most menial task in that culture, a job so low on the status pole that Jews who had slaves and servants of their own would not allow their Jewish slaves to wash the feet of others. They would require their Gentile slaves to do it. This is almost incomprehensible that the God of the universe would get down on his knees and wash the dirty feet of 12 men who hadn't thought to do this themselves when they came in. See, it was normal, it was customary that when you came to a meal that you would wash your feet. You've been walking around dusty roads all day in sandals. You're going to be lying at a table, which is how they ate. It was customary that somebody would offer to wash the feet of the others, but none of these men had chosen to do that. Instead, they're bickering about who's the greatest of them all. And so Jesus quietly gets up and goes over to the door and takes off his outer clothes, picks up the basin of water, brings it back. You can imagine it probably got very quiet around the table at that point. What is he doing? And he gets down on his knees and he just begins to wash their feet. It says in this passage that Jesus loved his own who were in the world. He loved them to the end. I thought about, what does that mean, love them to the end? The end of his time on earth? But we know Jesus' love for us extends way beyond that. It extends into eternity. It doesn't end in time. Maybe it means he loved them to the uttermost. Maybe it means he was about to show them the depth of his love for them, that he would stoop as low as this. The meal's in progress, and it says in verse 3, Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power. You know, you are a person of power. You ever think about the power that you have? We all have power. We have powers. We have power in terms, you may not have superpowers, but you have powers for sure. Time is a power, right? You have power over how you use your time. Some of you have money. Finances, money is a power, okay? You have choices about how you use that. Some of you have positions of power where you make decisions that affect other people and their lives. We all have a tongue, right? And the tongue is a powerful thing. Our words have power. The Bible says they have the power of life and death, okay? We all have certain powers. The question is, how are we going to use the power that we have? Jesus had all of the power It says, right, what did we read in verse 3? All things were under his power. Everything was under the power of Christ. Right? And how did he use his power? He humbled himself to serve others. And that's the use of power. Power is a gift to be used to serve others. Andy Crouch wrote an article in Christianity Today, and this is what he said about it. It's a little bit long, but I think it's worth reading. Power is not given to benefit those who hold it. It's given for the flourishing of individuals, peoples, and the cosmos itself. Power's right use is especially important for the flourishing of the vulnerable, the members of the human family who most need others to use power well to survive and thrive. The young, the aged, the sick, and the dispossessed. Power is not the opposite of servanthood. Rather, servanthood, ensuring the flourishing of others, is the very purpose of power. Why does God give us abilities and skills and talents and opportunities and money and time? So that we can use those gifts to ensure the flourishing of others. Servanthood is the very purpose of power. Second thing about this that I want to say, the next point. Jesus could serve because he knew exactly who he was. Going on in verse 3, it says, Jesus knew that he had come from God and was returning to God. You see, Jesus was very secure in his identity. He knew exactly who he was, and knowing exactly who he was, he had no problem getting down on that floor and washing the feet of his disciples. When we're secure in who we are, when we know where our identity is and what it's based in, then it frees us to serve others unreservedly. It's only when we have to protect our egos, right, and protect our pride and make sure that we, you know, keep our status clear in the eyes of everybody that it becomes hard to serve others. Because then we're always thinking about the hierarchy, right? I mean, after all, I'm the boss. I worked my way up here. I don't clean toilets, do I, John? I don't. Actually, I have. And even recently, I got to remove a toad from the men's room. So that was. But I was outdone by John, who removed a snake from the men's room. Yeah. So guys, be careful. Just take a look when you walk in. But do you understand what I'm saying? You know, when you have somebody who's really concerned about protecting their status and their image in front of everybody else, and they're insecure about who they are and what their identity is based in, then they are reluctant to serve other people, or they make sure that everybody knows where they stand. I have an illustration of this. Years ago, I had a job interview when I was living in St. Louis, and I remember this so well. I got into this elevator, and I went up a few floors to the office where I was going to be interviewed by this man who had the power to hire me or not. And we went into his office, and he motioned for me to sit down on a couch. And while he went out behind his desk and sat down in his desk chair, well, I got to tell you, and I'm not making this up, it may sound like I'm exaggerating, I'm not exaggerating at all. This couch was literally about 6 inches off the floor. Okay, it was a low couch, and it wasn't a very stiff couch. It was the kind of couch where you sit down and then you collapse, right? So I sat on this couch and I'm collapsed, and I'm a tall guy. I felt like a child sitting on the floor in that office, looking up to this man behind his desk, sitting in his desk chair. And I was very uncomfortable. I don't think I interviewed well because I felt so awkward and uncomfortable. I didn't get the job. But I remember walking away from that interview thinking, I think he does that on purpose. I really do. I think he does that on purpose so that people will know he's the boss and you're not. You see, people who are insecure about themselves, they have to make sure everybody stays aware of that. But when we are secure about our identity and followers of Jesus, you are a child of God, you are a son or daughter of the King, and that doesn't change whether you are in the penthouse or scrubbing the toilets. Your identity is in Christ. It's in Christ. So when he brings you opportunities to serve, even if it's something that would be demeaning to other people, it's no mark against you and your security and your place with Jesus. My next point. It's just as important for us to be servable as it is for us to be servants. Peter, Jesus comes around to Peter. He's washing these feet. He gets to Peter, and Peter says, whoa, 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 stop. No, 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 no. You don't wash my feet, Jesus. At least Peter understood, you know, that this is his rabbi, his teacher, his Lord, and he shouldn't be washing his feet. Well, you know, the response, well, Peter, how come you didn't, like, you know, get at this yourself? But in any event, Jesus doesn't challenge him on that. He just says, listen, Peter, if you don't let me wash your feet, in other words, if you don't receive from me, then you have no part of me. This foot washing is only a precursor to the greater humiliation that Jesus is about to undergo in just a few hours. The humiliation of being stripped naked, of being beaten, of going through a mock trial, and then being paraded through town, nailed to a cross in front of all the people that were out there that day, just hanging on this cross, dying, while there are men at the foot of that cross who are throwing dice, gambling to see who's going to take his clothes. That's humiliation. And Jesus is going to go through that humiliation for one reason, right? To pay for our sins. And here's the rub. We have to be willing to accept what Jesus has done for us. We have to be willing to accept this from Christ, that he gave himself up for us, that he was willing to humiliate himself for us. And Peter is saying, can't accept that. And Jesus is saying, if you don't accept my doing for you, then you don't have a relationship with me. And to Peter's credit, he immediately, you know, he spins right around, and all of a sudden, well, in that case, Jesus, you can wash my feet, you can wash my head, you can wash my hands, you can wash me all over, because I definitely want this relationship with you. Some people are hard to serve. Have you come across that in life? Some people are really hard to serve. They just don't want to take anything from you. You know, it's always, well, you did that for me, and I owe you one, so I'll get you back. I'll pay you back, don't you? You know, it's hard for some people to accept being served. And I think that's the reason it's hard for some people to accept Christ and what he's done for them. You know? I don't need a God. I don't need saving. I can take care of myself. I do pretty good. I've made it pretty well in life. And Jesus says, listen, you have to be willing to receive from me if you want relationship with me. The next point. Being all in with Jesus includes being willing to serve others as he has served us. So I was thinking about the people that Jesus served as he walked the earth. People who had jobs that everybody else despised, like Matthew, the tax collector. People who were struggling and wrestling with sin, like the woman caught in adultery. People of different cultures, like the centurion who had the paralyzed servant and came to Christ for help. People who had illnesses that caused other people to shun them and keep their distance, like the lepers. At this supper, did you notice that Jesus washed the feet of Judas? Jesus washed the feet of the man who in just a few minutes is going to leave the meal and go and make arrangements for Jesus to be arrested, tried, and crucified. And Jesus washed his feet. Being all in with Jesus means we're going to be called to serve people that we find it hard to serve. We're going to be called to do things for people who have hurt us, who have been cruel, who have been insensitive or unkind. We're going to be asked, can you find a way to love them? And I recognize, and I get it, your silence is deafening. This is hard. This is hard to serve and love people who have not treated us well is hard. But are we willing to take it to Christ then? Are we willing to say to Jesus, I don't know how to do that. I don't know how to get there. I don't know how to love that person. But if you'll help me, I want to be able to. Can we do that? Because I don't want to be insensitive. I know some of you have been hurt in unimaginable ways by people. And you hear me say these words and you think, nah, no way, he doesn't get it. I could not. And you're right, I don't completely understand your situation. But I know that Jesus calls us to love even our enemies. And if we're not there today, then part of being all in is saying to Jesus, you got to help me. You got to help me. As long as it takes, you got to help me. One more. Our confidence in God means we can serve without keeping score. Sometimes service becomes a matter of keeping score, right? I did for you, you'll do for me, we're even now, you owe me one, you know, I'll get back, you know, those kinds of things. I want to say that when we serve in the way of Christ, we serve without keeping score. We very quickly, we lose count of who did for who and how many times somebody did for me, and those things just become completely unimportant. Why? Because we know that God knows. We know that God knows. And that one day he's gonna make it all right, right? He's gonna take care of it. Hebrews 6:10 tells us this. It says, God is not unjust. He will not forget your work and the love you've shown him as you have helped his people and continue to help them. I read that quickly. Let's read a little bit more slowly. God is not unjust. He will not forget your work and the love you have shown him. The love you've shown him as you've helped his people and continue to help them. See, when we serve in the way of Christ, we're showing our love to God through those acts of service. And God's not going to forget what you've done. So we can serve and trust that God is well aware and he's going to take care of us. And he will. Jesus says at the end of this, I've set you an example that you should do as I've done for you. Now, he doesn't mean that we're not going to have foot washing here this morning, okay? He says it's an example. An example of being willing to become humble and serve others. And he says if we will do that, we'll be blessed. Anybody here want to be blessed? Anybody? Three or four of you want to be blessed? We all want to be blessed, don't we? Jesus says, if you want to be blessed, serve others. Serve others with my love. Big things, little things, do it all with great love, and you'll be blessed.